Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Welcome to, well, a little bit of a different podcast. We did this last year with Tom Musa and Anthony Franco here, but obviously Tom's not here, but we're going to do a little bit of a preview for the NCAA regionals and kind of give our little reactions here about a day after the selection show. So Anthony's here. Anthony, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, feel free to, my man.
Hey, what's up, Tyler? It's been too long since we've done one of these. So I'm Anthony Franco. I do some occasional podcasts and writing for Prospects Live. So happy to talk about college baseball for, I mean, the first time all year for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, we have to deal with my pan the second straight year, but we won't start off with that. We'll kind of get onto that here in a little bit. But kind of just want to start off with the initial reaction, especially with the bubble, because the committee kind of really took a step forward this year and kind of really valued non-conference scheduling and series wins. I kind of want to start off with Rutgers. That felt like they were on the right side of the bubble yesterday morning, and they were left out despite finishing second in the Big Ten tournament. And also kind of just weird that Big Ten only had two teams, with Maryland now hosting as a 15 seed and then obviously Michigan being a 3 seed and winning the tournament. Kind of explained, it kind of feels weird that Rutgers isn't in the field.
Yeah, so I expected them to get in. They went 44-15. They were pretty clearly the second place team in the regular season of the Big Ten. They made it to the Big Ten Conference Tournament Championship, where they, like you said, lost to Michigan. Maryland was clearly the best Big Ten regular season team. And like you mentioned, they got to host, although a little bit lower than I kind of expected at 15. It did seem like the committee just didn't love the Big Ten this year, which I kind of get. It wasn't a very strong overall league. But it was, especially on first glance, very surprising to me that Rutgers didn't get in. They went 44-15. You know, the Big Ten is still a Power Five league, and I kind of expected them to get three bids once Michigan, you know, quote unquote, stole one. I will say that the more that I look at Rutgers' overall results, the more I sort of get where the committee's coming from. There were really only other three, you know, you would say solid teams in the Big Ten this year: Michigan, Iowa, and Maryland. Rutgers played all three of those teams in a weekend series. They lost every one of those series. And so a lot of their resume was just that they didn't have many high-end wins so much as every time they faced a team that they should beat, they beat them. And so I do think that personally I would have had them in somewhere. But like you said, it really seemed like the committee kind of valued strength of schedule this year more so than in a lot of years, and Rutgers just didn't have that.
Yeah, and it's like every year is kind of different with the committee. Like sometimes it'll be RPI they value. Sometimes, you know, it's like this year where non-conference scheduling is kind of really the big deal. Like conference play as well in other years is going to be big. But kind of just looking at Rutgers too, you know, strict schedule is 149. Non-conference schedule is 238, which, I mean, when you kind of look at where Rutgers is, you know, New Jersey and Northeast, yeah, that's not the greatest place to start a season. And this also goes for like Notre Dame not getting in the national seed as well. I thought they were going to at least host after the ACC tournament last week. And now it's, you know, kind of the second year in a row that the NCAA kind of shafted Notre Dame. And that kind of goes down to what kind of feels like representation on the board. ACC and the Big Ten did not have a representative on the board this year. It was mainly like SEC had one from Mississippi State. Most everything else was kind of just like a the mid-majors that were kind of running the committee show this year. And there's nothing against the committee. I mean, they value what they value, and you kind of have to respect that. But it definitely was a surprise with Rutgers, you know, going 17-7 in the Big Ten, which, you know, I understand Big Ten is not the greatest baseball conference, but there's still some really, really good teams up there. It's just strength of schedule really just hurt Rutgers. Weather obviously doesn't help, you know. Starting in February, it's not easy up there. You really don't really get out of the snow and everything like that up until like at least beginning of April, depending on the year. So it sucks. And same goes for Wofford as well. You kind of look at them. They lost a SoCon title to UNC Greensboro. They went 42-16-1. I think they won the regular season title. I could be mistaken. They had a pretty good resume to go in, and they were also left out. But also, it's kind of a similar strength schedule to what Ole Miss has, and Ole Miss was the last team in. Kind of an interesting take from the committee as well here. So I kind of want to get your thoughts here on Wofford and Notre Dame and everything like that.
Yeah, I mean, Notre Dame, yeah, I think you basically said it all about it is tough, you know, for Northeast teams or, you know, Midwest teams to schedule midweek. A lot of times, obviously, you don't have as much leeway for midweek travel, and the quality of competition in those parts of the country is just not as strong as it's going to be on the West Coast or in Texas or the Southeast. And like you said, it did seem like this committee really valued that stuff. So, unfortunate for Notre Dame. I did expect them to host. I did think they should have hosted, but that's kind of in line with where the committee ended up with everything else that came after in terms of the at-large discussion. On Wofford, yeah, I mean, you were right. They did win the league, and it wasn't particularly close, you know, as far as the regular season went. They won it by 4 or 4.5 games, something like that. So it wasn't – they really dominated that whole league. And even in non-conference, they took a series on the road from Dallas Baptist, who did get an at-large. You know, I think you could say should have been near the bubble. It didn't seem like the committee really put them in that category. But I did think that Wofford should have gotten in. And the way that the conference tournament setup is, it really just kind of irks me. And I'm going to use this as Wofford is kind of a good example of why I think that we need a change to how the auto bids work for these leagues that are not traditionally going to get at-larges, which is that it all, especially for leagues, you know, the SoCon had a chance, but there are other leagues where it's just absolutely going to be whoever wins the conference tournament gets the auto bid for that league and everyone else is out. And so you get teams like Wofford, or you had the College of Charleston, who won the CAA by, I think, like 4 or 5 games again, who, because they had one bad weekend, or in Wofford's case, one bad Sunday against UNC Greensboro, is just gone. And that stinks. It shouldn't, you know, negate the fact that the entire regular season body of work. And so that's why I really think that there should be some sort of system, whether you're talking about, you know, rigging it for buys or something that really rewards the top regular season finisher, because ultimately what we want in the field is the best teams that we can get. And the regular season body of work for Wofford, like, I feel comfortable saying that they're a better team than UNC Greensboro, even in spite of what UNC Greensboro did to them on Sunday, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And even looking at some of the other bubble teams that actually did make it in, like Grand Canyon, I have no issue with Grand Canyon even being in the tournament, honestly. It's just looking at what they have here on the RPI. They're 50th in RPI. They were 41-19. Really ran the Western Athletic Conference at 25-5. Mm-hmm. And, of course, when we talk about valuing the non-conference schedule, their non-conference schedule was ranked 10th, and they came away with some very valuable wins. I think they beat Arizona. I can't remember if they played Texas Tech, but I feel like that was a series at some point. Or like Texas Tech went out there. I can't remember if it was Grand Canyon or not. So yeah, like Grand Canyon getting in, I don't have any, you know, faulting for the committee on that. They stuck to what they valued, and looking at what we're looking at, it's a very good resume that Grand Canyon actually has, even though they didn't win the Western. Liberty as well had a pretty tough non-conference schedule. I think they're 8-13 or something like that. And they also beat Florida on the road to begin the year. And Florida is the 13th seed in the nation right now. So that's a pretty good indication of what, you know, what we mentioned, the committee valuing the non-conference strength schedule here. The Ole Miss thing, I'll be honest. With Ole Miss, it's kind of cutting it close. They finished 32-22. They had an 18th overall, their strength schedule was like 18 or something like that. Can I give your thoughts on that one? That was kind of a shock for me, honestly, with seeing Ole Miss in the field.
Yeah, I didn't expect them to get in. Ultimately, they went 1-done, I believe, in the SEC tournament, and their aggregate conference record was 14-17, which I think was tied for 9th or 10th in the SEC. The RPI was in like the high 30s, I believe. You have that in front of you, right? You have their RPI?
39.
Yeah, so it didn't seem like they were going to get in. It seemed like a lot of the, the D1 Baseball, Baseball America guys who do these kind of projections leading up to it didn't seem to generally expect Ole Miss to get in. And again, like when you look at who the committee had as the first team out, which I know you're anxious to talk about, that was NC State, a team in the ACC, obviously, who had a better aggregate conference record. NC State, after factoring in their run in the ACC tournament, was a game above 500 in conference play, a few spots ahead in the RPI. And so I think when you pit those two teams head to head, I would have given the nod to NC State. So I'll kind of pass this back to you because I know you have strong feelings about this one.
That's definitely one way to put it. I'm not going to try and put my bias or play the victim card out here, mainly because of what has happened with NC State in the past year. Obviously, with College World Series last year, the football UCLA bowl game that happened in the December, and of course the women's basketball thing. I'm going to put that all to the side here. But when we talk about the College World Series as of last year, I think the word I used was bittersweet. Kind of just like to explain the whole situation, how I felt about it. This year is not bittersweet. There's a legitimate gripe within the fan base, and I feel like this is probably the worst gut punch they've had in a while. Yeah. You talked about it. This is a team that, yes, they kind of did stumble their way through May. They lost a series at home against UNC with 2 run losses. They beat Duke, which Duke isn't going to help your case out because Duke finished 13th in the ACC. And then, of course, you get swept at home by Wake Forest. You kind of stumbled your way in there and you put yourself on the bubble. But what NC State did was they played in one of the tougher pools in the ACC tournament. Miami and Wake Forest were top 12 RPI teams at the time. And they won the pool, went 2-0, won the semifinal, and then made their way to Sunday and ultimately lost to UNC. And the way I kind of think about this is UNC definitely has deserved their chance to host. They used that tournament run, and I have no critique of UNC hosting at all this year. I feel like that was something that they deserved. And kind of just looking at everything here, if you look at the tournament run for UNC and give them a hosting bid, why don't you look at NC State's tournament run and give them at least an at-large? NC State wasn't supposed to be on the bubble. Like, I remember yesterday morning, D1 Baseball had them as a 2 seed. And it was very weird reading the text messages I got from you guys yesterday. I was like, I want Tyler's live reaction and this and that. I'm like, it left me stunned. Because I watched that team last week in Charlotte, fight through that pool. Even Aaron Fitt from D1 Baseball was stunned. Like, I think Kendall Rogers called it an absolute joke. And I don't disagree. Granted, yes, the non-conference championship schedule for NC State is not good. And that's something that, Boo Corrigan and the athletic director and the department really need to look into next year, personally. Like, their strength of schedule non-conference of 181, and that doesn't help with the fact that Coastal Carolina and the Campbell games got rained out. They still beat ECU twice, and ECU is a national seed this year. They beat Miami in the ACC tournament. That was the only time they faced them this year. I kind of just wonder what kind of thing the committee was kind of looking at here. Because looking at the side-by-side compared to Ole Miss, who got in over them, Q1 in the RPI, State had a 13-15 record. Ole Miss was 8-10, 9-3 in Q2, 10-8 compared to Ole Miss. So there's a clear difference in the Q2 RPI here. But yeah, I just it sucks. And like I said, this is probably the worst gut punch that the fan base and the team have had to deal with. Because not only are you coming off the College World Series last year, you're now essentially gone from, okay, we're talking about preparing for the NCAA tournament on Sunday in the media room, to now the next day, you don't even have that chance to prove yourself in the postseason. And you feel bad for the guys, especially like Devontae Brown and JT Jarrett, who they came back and they were senior leaders for this team. And now they don't have any, they don't have a chance to come back next year. They've basically had their chance ripped away from them. And I don't know if, you know, how NC State reacted to Omaha last year had anything to do with this. I know some people brought it up, and, you know, Avon and crew, they were pretty critical and completely honest about how everything was handled last year. It sucks. That's just the only thing I can say to it. It sucks. It feels criminal. It's what the team account tweeted out yesterday. I don't know how you can really lead them out with a 32 RPI and an aggregate 17-16 ACC record after that title or that title game run in Charlotte. It kind of boggles my mind a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I don't feel quite as passionately about it as you do, but I will say that just, again, putting them up head-to-head against Ole Miss, and it's not, I'm not trying to slight Ole Miss. Like, they're a very talented team. I don't think that their body of work deserved a spot in the field, but they're unquestionably one of the most talented teams in the country. And there's a real chance that, you know, Jacob Gonzalez and Hayden Dunhurst can go there and win a regional. I'm not saying that Ole Miss is incapable of doing that or anything. I just think when you stack them up, everything kind of leaned towards NC State in that head-to-head. And again, you kind of acknowledge like the non-conference strength schedule for NC State was bad. You know, they didn't have many quality wins early in the season. Did get swept by Northeastern. But again, like Ole Miss also didn't have a ton outside of SEC play. I think their like best non-conference series win was maybe Virginia Commonwealth, something like that. So, you know, again, like I would have leaned NC State there. I was very surprised they didn't get in. Didn't even really give it much thought while watching the selection show until we reached the end, and they were just like, oh yeah, by the way, NC State's, we haven't called them, and that's 64. So definitely a surprise.
Yeah. And like I said, I didn't think that team was on the bubble at all. Like, granted, yes, after the Wake Forest sweep going into the tournament, you have a case for them to be on the bubble at that point, and they have to perform in Charlotte. And that's what they did. They performed in Charlotte, and they basically secured themselves a spot. And I think one of the reasonings that the committee also used when they kind of explained that was like, looking at the last 10 games, Ole Miss was 7-3 and State was 5-5. Kind of just looking at that, the May scheduling, Ole Miss definitely swept LSU at LSU. That's a big, big series to grab because LSU, I think, was like top 10 at the time or something like that. And they also beat Southern Miss at Southern Miss as well. But also you kind of have to take into account the Mizzou series, and Mizzou finished like 10-20 in the SEC, and they swept Mizzou pretty handily. And then they lost a series to Texas A&M. So, I mean, yeah, it's just, even with my bias aside, I still believe that NC State, you know, in a normal year, that's a resume to be at least a 2 seed. If not, maybe like at minimum a 3 seed in the tournament. So,
yeah. Yeah. I just, as a quick digression, I hate the idea that we're going to value the last 10 games of the season more than anything else. Like, it's just, I don't understand. Like, we're not picking the 64 most talented teams. We agree that, you know, with the auto bids and things like that, or even with the at larges, the goal is not to pick the teams that have the best rosters. If we did that, it would be probably all 14 SEC teams and, you know, the majority of the Big 12 and almost every ACC team. That's not the point. By the end of this, we're looking at who play the best over 45 games and trying to construct a field based on body of work and resume. And so the idea that, like, well, these guys were 7-3 in their last 10, so they're hot going in. It's just, so are we just going to pretend that what happened in March and April doesn't matter. I don't understand why we would value what happens in May at a greater proportion than what happens in March, because the point is to determine who had the best season, you know?
Yeah, and I feel like we're nitpicking there at that to kind of like give reason. It sucks. It's a gut punch for the team. It's a gut punch for the fan base who's had to, you know, endure last year and now come back this year. Same for the team. You know, I don't think I've seen an Avent quote on this yet. I could be mistaken, but I know Mike Martin at Florida State and like Scott Ford from UNC have already said they have no idea why State isn't in the tournament. And I think honestly, their statements are more, you know, they're more impressive than what Boo Kerrigan put out. So when your athletic director is kind of having the worst statement out of here, it's not good. But this also should kind of be like a wake-up call for State to kind of schedule non-conference better. If this is something that's going to be valued more in the future, you know, you kind of have to go into every year wondering, it's like, well, maybe they're valuing non-conference again, or maybe it's back to RPI. You kind of got to find that balance. And, you know, ultimately, I think State next year should at least try and find a better non-conference schedule, and instead of trying to schedule like Radford or like Quinnipiac every single year. So ultimately, if hopefully next year we get something like what Florida State had, where they had TCU and Cal come to Tallahassee.
Yeah, I agree. I know that we're going to move towards looking at the teams that actually did get in a second, but the one other team that I kind of wanted to talk about, and not even necessarily criticize the committee, because I don't know that I would have found room for them either, but that's Old Dominion, who I believe was the second team out on the final one. I'm just bummed that they're not in, even if I don't necessarily think that I could have squeezed them into the field either. I was kind of hoping that they would find a way in. You know, this is a team that hosted last year, got to a regional final, gave Virginia, you know, real run for their money. UVA, I think, won in extras and a walk-off homer by Devin Ortiz to win the regional. And they won 41 games this season again. It's a veteran team. Brock Gagliardi, Andy Gariola, those guys are really good. And so I was a little bit, you know, again, not surprised. I didn't think that they were going to get in, and just too many of the stolen auto bids that left some deserving teams out. But I really think that if ODU had gotten in as a 3 seed, they might have made some noise again.
I don't disagree. Yeah, like you mentioned them hosting last year. They didn't even host in their old ballpark. They had to host down in Columbia, South Carolina.
Yeah.
Which was, granted, yes, it was COVID related because of the fact that, you know, they have to put bids in like months ahead of time, and they only selected like, I don't know, it was weird. And I think Old Dominion probably does deserve to get in. But like I said, the only real gripe I kind of have with this was Old Miss getting in over State. You can probably throw in Old Dominion in that one as well. Like, that's really the main thing. But probably the time to get off this topic, because we're 20 minutes into this now, and we kind of just want to give a kind of like a run through of the regionals. We're not going to give like main picks. We kind of just want to go over this real quick. So kind of just want to start off in Knoxville. Tennessee obviously deserved the number one seed. This is a better team than what Arkansas was last year at 53-7. And they just steamrolled the SEC and made pretty easy work again through Hoover as well, despite the fact that the weather wanted to make it very difficult on them. But that regional is Tennessee's the one seed, Georgia Tech's 2, Campbell is 3, and Alabama State is 4. And kind of just looking at it off the bat, that Campbell-Georgia Tech game on Friday is actually kind of pretty underrated in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. Campbell had a great season. Really kind of ran away with the Big South. I wonder if they would have been an at-large team, even had they not won the auto bid. And obviously Georgia Tech, super talented, being kind of mercurial like most of the ACC, was kind of up and down. But, you know, with Kevin Parada carries them to a regional final or something, would I be surprised? Not at all. I would be more surprised if they win it, just because of how good Tennessee's been, you know, start to finish. But
yeah, and like you mentioned Kevin Parada, obviously probably should have won ACC Player of the Year. Him and Max Wagner were pretty similar, but I think I like Parada's strikeout and walk numbers more, because it was almost an equal one-to-one. But kind of looking at Campbell, too, if you're Georgia Tech, you're facing Thomas Harrington in that first round game. And Thomas Harrington's had one of the best years of any pitcher in the college baseball this year. He's really vaulted himself in the first round competition. Really, it's a tough task to have, especially with that kind of lineup, too, because you got Zach Neto's hitting over 400 and you put him in a ballpark like Lindsey Nelson. That ball is going to fly out there. So that's a really, really tough matchup to have in that first game. Not to mention whoever Campbell ends up playing after, you're going to probably throw out Cade Cooler, who, you know, really was one of the bigger parts of getting Campbell out of that elimination bracket in the Big South and getting them through to the final to beat Charleston Southern twice. So after Knoxville, we kind of go on to Statesboro, and that's an absolute gauntlet of a regional, just on paper. You got Notre Dame, who should have hosted, Texas Tech's in there as well. UNC Greensboro is definitely not, with the way that they've finished, I think they could be a legitimate threat as well. So Georgia Southern definitely has it cut out for them to make it out of that regional.
Yeah, you mentioned that. I think Notre Dame definitely should have been a host. We've talked about them already. So Texas Tech didn't have the RPI for that. So they were never in that kind of range, but as far as three seeds go, you're not going to find one much more talented than them. You're talking about Chase Young and Easton Morrell, Kurt Wilson. They're going to hit. So I don't want to give short shrift to Georgia Southern. This is a team that went 40-18. The Sun Belt was a really good league. I think that they were deserving of at least consideration for a host spot. And I don't have any issue with them getting that final host seed, but I do think that even at home, it's going to be their underdogs to come out of that one.
Absolutely. And I feel like it's probably one of Notre Dame or Texas Tech that actually makes it through and wins the regional, in my opinion. Moving on to the next one, we're going to go over to Stanford. Stanford is probably one of the hottest teams in the country, and they ended up winning the Pac-12. They won like 15 or 16 in a row. Interesting regional they got there. You know, Stanford's obviously number one seed. Texas Tech is going to travel out to be the number two seed against UC Santa Barbara, who's a three. And Binghamton I think it's been like the first time in like 10 years there in the tournament. I couldn't be mistaken on that. But kind of just talk about that Texas Tech or Texas State UC Santa Barbara opening game, because that's a little underrated as well. Texas Tech has been very good this year, and Santa Barbara is obviously one of the best mid majors in the country.
Yeah, I mean, we were just talking about how good the Sun Belt was as far as Georgia Southern goes. Texas State won that league at 26-4. So really good team. And I think that they could have been in the hosting conversation themselves, as they went to Arizona, took a series from them, non-conference. They took a game from Texas. So, you know, very viable two seed. They may not have the name recognition of some of the other ones, but really good season for them. Stanford, I just think, has the kind of high-end talent that's going to make them the favorite when you're talking about Brock Jones and Braden Montgomery. UCSB, really, it was a down year for the Big West, and there was nobody who was even particularly close to the Gauchos in terms of, I think that they had that league sewed up, you know, about 2 or 3 weeks to go, and it was clear from about mid-March that they were going to win it. So, and the Big West was the one league that doesn't have a conference tournament, so they've kind of coasted in towards the end, but that's really a testament to how much they dominated.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, the Big West being not that competitive. I think the closest team to them personally was Cal Poly, and they were like 22-8 or something like that. And that's a team that has Brooks Lee, Drew Thorpe, who's, I think he leads the nation in strikeouts at the moment. So, yeah, UC Santa Barbara didn't really have much competition, but I still feel like they're a pretty big threat in this regional. But obviously, I think Stanford, being as hot as they are and how talented they are, they're ultimately probably going to advance out of this regional. Moving on to the next one is College Park, which we mentioned. I think Maryland probably deserved a better seeding here. And they also have a pretty tough regional as well, with Wake Forest as a two seed, who could have actually hosted as well. UConn's a three seed, who won the Big East and had a really impressive season. Then Long Island is also in the regional as well. That Wake Forest team, that's a team to really worry about in that regional, because they could definitely win that thing.
Yeah, I mean, they always hit. Obviously, it's a kind of hitter-friendly environment, but veteran team, I feel like Michael Tarconi's been there forever now. They have, it looks like, six guys with an OPS above 1,000, so five who've played regularly. And Maryland's kind of in that same boat. Maxwell Costas, again, another guy who it feels like has been in college forever and has just always mashed. And then UConn had a little bit of a slip up towards the end in the Big East, but ultimately ran through the conference tournament and really was pretty clearly the best team in that league start to finish.
Yeah, and like I remember Maryland against Campbell at the beginning of the year. That was a really underrated series with how the pitching was in that series too, because Maryland has good arms. Nick Dean's good. Ryan Ramsey has been really good this year. He also threw a perfect game at some point this year. But with Wake Forest and their bats, like Nick Kirch, Brock Wilkin, Brendan Tinsman, Pierce Bennett, and all those guys have all just raked this year. It'd be pretty tough to not see them advance out of this, especially with the way Rhett Lauder and Teddy McGraw, Josh Hartle, that rotation's been. It's pretty tough. And honestly, I wish UConn still had Reggie, so that way I could watch my flamethrowing lefty.
Yeah.
So moving on to the next one, Austin and Greenville would meet up here. And Austin, that regional, you know, it's not anything close to what it was last year with Austin. That regional last year was pretty much a cakewalk for them. But this year you got La Tech as a 2 seed, Dallas Baptist getting in as that 3 seed, then Air Force being a good 4 seed with Paul Skinny's in that Air Force team as well. Honestly, like I said, not the strongest regional, but there's some talent in there as well with La Tech in there and Dallas Baptist.
Yeah, I mean, DBU's had a weird season. They were really good in non-conference, and that's ultimately what carried them. They were barely above 500 in the Missouri Valley. I'm not really sure why they couldn't ever seem to get their wheels spinning in that league, which they were pretty clearly the most talented team in, even though they didn't play like it. But yeah, I mean, Jace Grady, Ryan Robleski, there's talent in that lineup, and then obviously DBU can always pitch. So, but I think Texas is among the strongest favorites to get out of there, you know, just that Melendez Murphy Staley combination in the middle. It's the lineup really top to bottom, experienced, a ton of talent. I'm a little bit concerned about the bullpen in the back of the rotation, but I don't think that it's going to inhibit them yet.
Yeah. I mean, Texas at the beginning of the year, I think the rotation was Pete Hansen, Tristan Stevens, and then you threw Tanner Witt into there. Tanner Witt obviously hasn't pitched since March. He had Tommy John surgery. And I think Lucas Gordon was the Sunday guy after that. Mm-hmm. So obviously you get a hole in the three hole in that rotation. But Pete Hansen and Trenton Stevens are still very solid arms. And Ivan Melendez, I think, is probably going to end up breaking Chris Bryant's BP Corps home run record here at some point. But that back of that bullpen too, like Aaron Nixon, as much as I do like him as a pitcher, more often than not, I feel like I'm watching him load the bases and then get out of it on a nightly basis. So it's going to be interesting. I don't disagree with Texas getting out of that, just with the fact that it's not that strong of a regional, in my opinion. But you also pair it up with Greenville. East Carolina has won like 19 straight, and they get rewarded with a national seed. And this might actually be the year that Cliff Godwin actually makes it to Omaha. You got East Carolina, the 1 seed. Virginia is the 2 seed. They were in contention to host at some point. Coastal Carolina also had a pretty damn good May at the 3 seed. Throwing Coppin State as the 4 seed. It's a bit of a tougher ask in this regional, but, you know, with how hot East Carolina is, I wouldn't be, you know, at all shocked if they made it through here, especially with Virginia and Coastal Carolina in this regional.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, ECU got swept by Bryant to start the season, I think, and then also lost to UNC. Like, there was a time when they looked like they might not be very good, even though they were, I think, a consensus preseason top 25 team. And like you said, just blistering hot pretty much throughout the entirety of conference play. You know, even without Carson Wisenhunt all year, they've pitched extremely well. Coastal has also had a lot of high-end starting pitching talent. Michael Knorr, Reed Van Scooter have been really good at the top of the rotation. And then UVA, again, another one of those teams. It's like, yeah, I think they were probably a consensus top 10 to 15 team in the country coming in, and pretty much everyone in the ACC was kind of up and down. But when you talk about Casey Saki and Jake Geloff in that lineup, Alex Tappan too, they're going to hit. I think that they're probably the best team in that regional. Although, again, like, you can argue with me if you really want to make a renewed push for ECU, but I like Virginia's lineup, I think, a little too much.
Yeah, no, I mean, you had that lineup, and plus you have Nate Savino now. He's back to chucking 93-96. That's a renewed kind of confidence in that kid, especially with the way that, you know, he's pitched the past couple of years with Virginia. And he even mentioned, like, ECU not having Wisdom, that really hurt them at the beginning of the year, because that team really had no identity for a couple of weeks. And then they finally found that together, like, halfway through April, something like that. So, yeah, it's definitely going to be a tough test for ECU. But honestly, if they can make it through this regional, I think they could probably handle Texas. And, you know, maybe we finally get to see Cliff Godwin in Omaha. I would love to see that personally. He's a coach that really deserves to be in that kind of atmosphere. And I really am rooting for him. He's a pretty easy guy to root for. Moving on to the next one, we're going to look at Chapel Hill and Stillwater. That's going to be the next super regional. UNC gets Georgia, VCU, and Hofstra in Bochumer. Not the strongest on paper. Georgia kind of faltered a little bit late in SEC play. Still a talented group of guys after watching them against Tennessee a couple weeks ago. And then VCU, obviously, they're one of the better pitching staffs in the nation. Tyler Locklear is also, you know, he's definitely one of the better college hitters in baseball this year. So I don't know. With the hot hand that UNC has, like we mentioned, East Carolina, I wouldn't be shocked to see North Carolina kind of have a pretty easy gateway to get through to Stillwater.
Yeah, I mean, I think that between them and ECU, it's, I mean, I guess you could always throw Tennessee in there because Tennessee's never been cold, but it's, you know, a run for which team is on the biggest heater right now. I really do kind of want to get your take on UNC because I think that you've seen them almost as much as anybody. Do you think that this is an Omaha caliber team? I mean, maybe a little bit concerned about the lineup depth, but you've got more experience with them than I do. So
the offense is not really what I'm worried about. It's more or less the back end of that bullpen. Mm-hmm. Davis Palermo has been one of the more solid college relievers in baseball this year. But kind of everyone else, Nick Pry, Sean Rapp, really are just like kind of like loogie arms. There's not as much depth back there, but with that lineup, they really do a good job of attacking early. Like Andrew Durante at the top of that lineup is insane. Then you follow that with Matt Korvath. Danny Soretti has finally found his way to hit again. And Honeycutt in that cleanup spot, if you watched what he did in Charlotte this past week, it was freakish. I think he's the first UNC freshman to actually have a 2020 season and the first one in the NCAAs in quite a while. Yeah. So, and really the bottom of that lineup too, like Mikey Madej looked very, very good in Charlotte. You don't have Johnny Castagnazzi fully in that lineup, but he's a very good option to have come off the bench. So really just looking at how good that UNC team is on paper and how hot they have been in the past month or so, it definitely feels like they could reach Omaha at some point.
Mm-hmm. And then Georgia is the other team that we haven't really touched on yet, but it's just kind of a veteran lineup. Maybe not as much star power at the top as some of the other SEC teams in the tournament, but they're just a bunch of guys who, well, that kind of work counts and have been there before. And then on the pitching side, obviously you got Jonathan Cannon at the top, who's among the best pitching prospects by us. So.
Yep. So, I mean, VCU, like, we can't ignore VCU too. They're also pretty hot coming into this. I just don't know if they're able to beat like UNC if they reach the regional final or anything like that. So, judgment's still to be left determined on that one. We'll leave that there. With Stillwater, Oklahoma State got a regional as well. They're a national seed, I think, number 7. You get Arkansas in that, and Grand Canyon is a 3 seed, and you have Missouri State as a 4 seed. Grand Canyon, Arkansas is also going to be a very good Friday matchup. Arkansas, obviously – I think they've lost Brady Tiger. I don't think he's going to be pitching this weekend out of the back of that bullpen, but Arkansas is still Arkansas. It's a very good squad. And Grand Canyon, obviously, we mentioned earlier with that strength of schedule and the non-conference, grabbing those pretty important wins. That's a team you don't really want to face as a three seed, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I think this might be my favorite regional field, just as, I mean, we've already talked about Grand Canyon, but with how good they were in the WAC all season and then their high-end out-of-conference wins that obviously had some pull with the committee. And like you mentioned, it's not crazy to me to think that they could beat Arkansas, but at the same time, like, this is a Hogs team that the RPI never kind of lined up for them to host, but I think they won 18 or 19 games in the SEC again. And it's just a really good veteran lineup, top to bottom. And I was disappointed by the season that Robert Moore had. I thought he was like a dark horse, top five kind of guy coming into the year, and then he hit like 230. But it wouldn't shock me at all if he flips a switch and kind of turns things on in the postseason. So, and then as far as Oklahoma State goes, like, they're just awesome lineup. Nolan McLean is incredible. I think that you're about as big a fan of his as any, right? So,
if we can get in the slot swinging and missing so much, then yeah, I'd definitely be a lot higher up on his fan club list, honestly. But he can also pitch out of that bullpen too. I think he's been a closer more often than not for them, and he can throw cheddar as well. And bringing back Robert Moore as well, you mentioned it, 230, 232, 367, 419, six bombs only compared to 16 he had last year. It was kind of a different player that they had, but he's got that experience. He's been in this situation before, and I think having that postseason experience is very valuable. So he's definitely someone I'd like to watch to see if he flips that switch, like you had mentioned. Moving on to the next couple of regionals with College Station and Louisville, Texas A&M is going to be facing TCU, Louisiana, who won their conference, and then Oral Roberts, and then Louisville is going to be getting Oregon, Michigan, and SEMO. Oregon being in Louisville is a little strange to me. But that's the lineup that can rake as well. So I would be, if I'm Louisville, I kind of a little worry about that. TCU is also getting their own right. And it's kind of weird considering Jim Schlossnagel left TCU for Texas A&M.
Yeah.
So that's a very interesting matchup that you're going to have in that regional.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be some intrigue there. TCU's lineup, I think, is really intriguing. I'm a little bit skeptical on the pitching, but, you know, love Braden Taylor out there. Their top of the order center fielder, Elijah Nunez, also just love watching that guy play. He's tiny. He's not going to hit for power, but just kind of has that like spark plug energy that I think is really good. From your like kind of throwback prototypical leadoff guy. Have you seen Louisville? I know that you've seen most of the ACC.
Yeah. So Louisville, I don't like the pitching. Jared Pullen obviously is the ace of that staff. But like both times I've seen him, he's walked like one outing was five guys. He walked in one inning. And then he actually didn't really look all that great against Pitt this past weekend in Charlotte. So I'm kind of skeptical on their pitching a little bit, but that lineup rakes. Dalton Rushing is having a mammoth year. You kind of throw in some other guys, with Rushing, like Christian Nabshick, who we might see him back. He's coming back from an ankle sprain, so I know that for a fact. Levi Usher's back, and that's very valuable defense that you have in center field as well. So that lineup definitely has the capability of putting up like 15 runs against even Oregon. So, you know. It's a very interesting regional, especially with Oregon being there. I think Oregon could definitely make some noise here.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't had a chance to see Oregon. Just a lot of the West Coast teams have been tough for me. The Pac-12 network stinks, and it's I can't get it with DirecTV, which is what I have. And so it's kind of the West Coast in general has been a little bit more of a blind spot for me. I have a lot more familiarity with the SEC, ACC, Big 12 teams, but it seems like Oregon – just kind of up and down the lineup has really hit, and they've sort of mixed and matched in the pitching staff a little bit. But
and then moving on to the next region, we're kind of going to speed this up a little bit so we're not wasting too much time. Coral Gables and Hattiesburg, you got Miami, Arizona, Ole Miss, and Kansas in Miami. And then Southern Miss is hosting LSU, Kennesaw State, and Army. Just looking on paper, Arizona might be a test for Miami, but I think ultimately with how Miami looks on paper, I think they're pretty easily getting through that region. Like, I would be shocked if they don't. With Hattiesburg, LSU is going to be a tough test. I thought they might end up actually being able to host at one point this year. Southern Miss is obviously deserving of hosting, and they got a really good duo in their rotation with Tanner Hall and Hurston Waldrop. Kansas State might be interesting as well, so kind of just give your thoughts on those two regionals right there.
Yeah, well, first, as a Buffalo native, I feel the need to correct you on Canisius pronunciation.
Canisius, so. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. My bad. Dad's alma mater, so I got to hop in there. So Arizona, I really like Garrett Irvin at the top of the rotation, and then obviously you got Otremba, Susak, they're really going to hit. And I think that they could give Miami a run, at the very least. So I'm not quite as confident as you are in the Canes getting through there, but, we've talked about Ole Miss again as well, just the kind of high end talent that they have and, you know, whether or not we think that they necessarily deserve to be in the field, definitely capable of getting out of there. There's a reason that they were a consensus like top five team preseason because there's a ton of talent on that roster. Like you said, you know, with Southern Miss, just a lot of the kind of the top end pitching, very, very good. I think that LSU has, you know, the kind of star power in the lineup that can make that really interesting if that's where the regional final kind of shakes out.
I absolutely agree. And even too, like LSU, you got Dylan Cruz in that lineup, Cade Doughty. This is a pretty star set, like you had mentioned. Yeah. I can definitely do damage if you have an off day if you're Southern Miss. So I'm going to move on here to Gainesville and Blacksburg. And just looking at the Gainesville regional, that's easily the toughest regional in this tournament right now. You got Florida, Oklahoma, who really put themselves into hosting consideration and ended up winning the Big 12. Liberty has already been to Florida. We mentioned it earlier. They won the first weekend against Florida down there. And they're always usually dangerous in the postseason. And Central Michigan is no pushover as well. And with Blacksburg, you know, it's nice to see Virginia Tech actually get a regional. I think it's the first time we've seen since 2013. You also got Gonzaga in that lineup, who is, without doubt, one of the best Western teams in the country. Columbia is a 3 seed out of the Ivy League, is a pretty good matchup. Not to mention Wright State's a 4 seed. And if you ask Tennessee how big of a deal that is, Wright State is always going to mash. And Virginia Tech's ballpark is definitely one of the more hitter-friendly ballparks in the nation. So that is obviously going to be a tough test, but that Gainesville regional is just, it's rough.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, I think that Oklahoma could have been a host, and, you know, you can argue that they maybe should have after they won the Big 12 tournament. And then again, like Central Michigan, Wright State, like these are perennial, like mid-major powerhouses there. Like these are consistently very good teams who at the very least are among the stronger 4 seeds, and they're going to give you a run. And then Liberty, I guess you could say, is in that bucket, although they're probably more high-end talent than either of those teams, which is why they got an at-large, even though they didn't end up winning the ASUN tournament. Virginia Tech, I think, is really interesting because I don't know how many people necessarily considered them the favorite coming in out of the ACC. And ultimately, they, as it turns out, are the highest ACC-seeded team, and I think kind of deservedly and expectedly so with the season that they had. So I'm curious, I don't know if you've seen Vautech in person, but what you sort of think of that team, it just seems like to me a lot of good veteran hitters kind of up and down that lineup.
Yeah, that's basically what it is. That offense can absolutely hit top to bottom. The pitching I thought was suspect at the beginning of the year, but they've really had some standouts that have popped up. Like Griffin Green's a good Friday night starter. Drew Hackenberg, a true freshman, went 10-2 this year with a really good record or ERA as well. So all around, they're a pretty good team. That lineup with Nick Bittison, Gavin Cross, Tanner Schoble, then you throw Jack Hurley and Cade Hunter in there. That is a very dominant top six to have in that lineup. Yeah. And not to mention your 9-hole hitters, Carson DeMartini, who has really just raked all year long in the 9-hole. that is a dangerous lineup. And, you know, yes, you got Gonzaga in that lineup and in that regional as well. With Gabe Hughes, Will Kempner, Tristan Vierling is a very, very good rotation to have. And you also just had Virginia Tech get shut out by Brandon Schaefer to make it to semifinals in ACC tournament play. It's definitely going to be an interesting regional, but I think Virginia Tech has that the power to get out of that with that kind of offense.
Yeah. I'm curious. You mentioned Gabe Hughes. We know that the Zags really have a lot of good high-end pitching. Would you, if you were in their position, would you start Hughes in game one against Columbia? You know, we usually see it's, you know, more common with ones versus fours where teams kind of hold back sometimes their best starter in hopes or the belief that they can get past whichever team they're facing and try to preserve their best arm for the winner's bracket. Obviously, it's a little bit different here because Columbia is a three seed and they had a really good season. I think they've got like a top 55 RPI, but I would say that they're probably one of the softer three seeds in the field. So if you were in their position, would you pitch Hughes against Columbia and try to make sure that you bank that first win, or would you hold him back for that Votek lineup?
Honestly, I think I would probably let Hughes pitch in the second game instead of having him go against Columbia. You mentioned it. Columbia is one of the softer three seeds in the tournament. Honestly, I thought they were a four seed heading in. And Hughes, just looking at what he's done, he pitched on the 27th against San Diego. So obviously looking now it's 4 days. He will have the rest to pitch on Friday. If I am Gonzaga, I'd probably go Kempner or Vierling over Hughes. So you can save him against that matchup against Virginia Tech if you happen to make it past Columbia.
Yeah, I agree.
And then we're going to go ahead and move on. We're coming up to the last little regional here, or the super regional mix. Auburn is hosting, which, you know, I kind of thought that was a little bit of a surprise, but, you know, Auburn definitely had the resume to do it. And obviously Oregon State and Corvallis is going to be hosting their national three seed, if I remember correctly. So Auburn's got UCLA, Florida State, and Southeastern Louisiana. And Oregon State has Vandy, San Diego, and New Mexico State, which is a little weird to see UCLA in Auburn instead of Corvallis, but also it kind of mixes up a little bit. I kind of don't hate that.
Yeah, I think the committee doesn't want to pair conference rivals there. So I think that's why, although it is a little bit surprising to see UCLA doing the quasi cross-country travel. With Auburn, I think you have to, you know, it's Sonny Deshar is kind of the guy. Just an unbelievable season that he had. So, you know, I am a little bit concerned about the arms there. But like you mentioned, maybe a little bit of a surprising host, but had a strong resume in the SEC. And then Oregon State, you're kind of at the forefront of the draft setup for us. So where would you kind of slot Cooper Jerpy right now?
That is a good question. We actually will have someone there in Corvallis for that. Jackson Thomas is going to be up there. And also, not to mention, I'll be at ECU more than likely. We'll have Jared Perkins in Maryland, and then we're going to try and get Harris Uden up at Chapel Hill. I'm not too sure how that's going to work out yet. But with Jerpy going in that New Mexico State lineup, I would probably pitch like Jake Pennings over him personally and save Jerpy for like San Diego if they happen to make it out of that Vandy game. Because then you're going to be setting up a potential Jerpy and Bryson Motz lineup or matchup, which I don't think San Diego will pass up pitching Motz in that first game against Vandy, because Vandy is obviously in their own right a very talented team. And they're going to be throwing at you probably like Christian Little or Patrick Riley, who are very good in their own rights. So, yeah, it's an interesting one. I would say they save Jerpy for the second game of that regional, but can't be too certain. For all I know, they could just throw Jerpy out for New Mexico State and just let him toy with that lineup, because he is a very, very, very fun arm to watch pitch. Florida State, I kind of want to touch on them a little bit. That lineup did pretty well in the ACC tournament. They run-ruled Virginia in the first game and kept it pretty close to Notre Dame in the second game. So With that said, Bryce Hubbard and Parker Messick are probably going to get either one of the first two games against UCLA. So that's a very formidable lineup for either one of them to face, really. But they're both seasoned. They're both very good starters. The lineup itself isn't too, like, enticing on paper. Jamie Ferreira is probably the best bat in that lineup, honestly, with Brett Roberts in the cleanup. But they can still do some damage. Like I said, they run-ruled Virginia last week. And that, with how good Virginia has been, that's a pretty damning statement to make.
Yeah, I agree.
So, all right, but that's going to wrap everything up. We're not going to make any picks here. And, you know, we'll enjoy our Friday. We'll enjoy our weekend this week, and we'll come back here with Super Regionals preview and matchups. So, for Anthony Franco, this is Tyler Jennings saying goodbye and have a great morning, evening, night, whatever time zone you're in while listening to us. And as always, thank you for joining in, listening as part of the Prospects Live Radio Network.